Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages. Welcome to the F4L headquarters. I am your host with the most. I am the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, here to welcome you to the return of Talking Tuesday. I hope you guys are all doing well. I hope you guys are enjoying your weeks and so forth. We hope, right? So today is a special day, I guess, of sorts. First and foremost, we're back here at the F4L headquarters on this great Tuesday. And it feels like it's been a little bit since I've done a show. And for that, I apologize. That's on me because life has kept me busy, both getting our new abode where it needs to be. Over the past weekend, I had surprised my wife with a surprise housewarming party, which went off without a hitch, thanks to my kids being able to also take part. I had my son meet my wife at work to slow her down a little bit so everyone at the party could get ready and whatnot. So it was a delightful little everyone, all hands, all deck surprise kind of a thing. As I'm making my tea, as I'm getting things in order here. Normally I have my tea ready, but I had brewed my tea thanks to our friends over at Brutalities. And today's tea of choice is French Toastbusters, one of my favorite teas they make. It's been a little while since I've done the show, so our tea is holding on. It's pretty good. I'm hoping that when I'm going to Monster Mania in October, at the end of this month, that our friends over there at Brutalities will be there so I can pick up my supplies, as that we know how to get there. And best place to get our tea intake is from Brutalities in person. And also in October, as we found out from our friends over at Dead Sled Coffee, they're going to be at Monster Mania in October. So I look forward to catching up and grabbing all of our coffee needs over there, over at that Monster Mania. As most people know, I am on staff now at Monster Mania, which I'm very proud to do. I'm very happy to be part of, the team, really. It's my turn to give back to everyone else and give back to Dave and the Hagans for always having, taking care of me and stuff like that, so I don't mind helping them out and helping that other Monster Mania guests and attendees can enjoy them as much as we have in our family. And Dave and the Hagans do a lot of work to get these shows where they need to be, and we're going to go into some Monster Mania updates and some things like that. We got a pretty stacked show. I don't perceive us having a guest today because it's too much for me to update you guys with. So I apologize for not inviting anyone on particularly for today. But probably this week I'm going to have a guest probably by Friday or not Friday. I got some things to do. But we will have a guest probably this weekend. By this weekend we'll have a guest on the F4L headquarters, perhaps a returning guest or a new guest. You never know. Stick around to find out. So let's get into this thing. First and foremost, like I said, I've been busy getting things situated at the new place. We had the housewarming party for my wife over the weekend, which went very well. She was surprised and she was happy. So that's the important part. And she had a good time. It was good. It's always good to see the kids and stuff like that and our friends who came. And I know a lot of people who wanted to be there and, well wishes and so forth. And down the road, they'll be down eventually to enjoy the new live action house of F4L headquarters. That should be pretty cool. Nothing major. It was what it needed to be. We did some cooking out and we did some, minor little activities. We played some basketball, my son and I. To the new basketball hoop I got for the driveway. I think by the end of the year, they're probably going to upgrade that basketball hoop for another basketball hoop. It was a lot of fun. And as we'll get into later on in the program, basketball is going to be something I'm going to have to get used to again, as much as a lot of other things. But you know what's funny is I believe, like, when it comes to sports in general or something you're used to, much like wrestling or combat or karate or martial arts in general or, you know, sports in, as a whole, I think if you once you know how to do certain things, whether it be, like I said, like either playing basketball or playing baseball, hockey, soccer, or aka football for the world audience. I should say, football for the most of us and then soccer for the American audience. And then when it comes to like other things, we get used to it. And once you learn and kind of get it down pat, kind of like swimming, once you learn how to do that, you kind of never forget. It's just something that gets embedded in you. I think there's definitely times when the more you do something in repetitive modes, you get better at it. In wrestling, and when it comes to pro wrestling anyway, we call it ring rust. If a person's been out of the ring for a little while and they seem a little sluggish in the ring, we call that ring rust for someone who takes some time off, usually coming back from injury or being off of a TV for a little while or not being able to wrestle for a while. Someone who tries to get back into the wrestling world from that, usually call that ring rust for those people who are getting back into the ring. But I've been fortunate enough that, some things I think the old term is riding a bike. Once you learn how to ride a bike, you never really forget. I'm not overly fond of the analogy. I know how to ride a bike, and I remember how to ride a bike. I don't enjoy riding bikes. It is my experience that walking is much more efficient sometimes if you know where you're going, and there's always other ways to get around. For those bikers out there in the world, to all the power to you, if that's something you enjoy. I don't choose to bike ride. I'm not overly fond of bike riding, of transportation. I find walking to be the best and the most reliable if it's in the walking distance. And I think I've established before my version of walking distance and what someone else might is completely different. I walked to other states accidentally recently without knowing I was walking in an opposite state. So that's quite the feat, let me tell you. Because I only really know a couple things. I know modes. I want to walk, and I walk. Usually I do this for exercise to keep healthy, keep in shape. And a lot of people will ask me, how do I keep my endurance up? How do I stay so, movable? And how do I keep so, energetic? Well, all honesty, sometimes you struggle as you get older. I think my old go-to is my adrenaline factor. Once I get my mind set up to something, I need to get somewhere. I need to go somewhere. Then clearly what I'm going to be doing is just going. That's part of the battle, is just going to, the event, going to where you need to be. And I think what happens is a lot of the times people let other things, other distractions get in the way of those things sometimes, where, they want to get there or they have some, they like to get into, go someplace. They say they want to go someplace and then just they don't have the drive to go. It's a cloudy day out. It's raining out. It's too hot, too cold, too icy. I don't have that mode in my mentality. If I need to go someplace, I just go. Usually I like to be timely. I'm a very punctual person. I pride myself on that. So when I set up, if I know I need to be someplace, I'll leave, much further than I, much ample enough time to be there on time, which is a tip I give to anyone out there, no matter what it is you want to do in life, whether it be, know, regular 9-to-5 job, whether it be in entertainment, whether it be whatever else. I always urge people to be early if you can for everything. Because here's the reason. Some people panic and they say, well, you know, I don't want to be too early because, you know, they're not going to be ready. Well, I think this is just your mind getting in the way of you trying to, you know, go with that. Let me tell you why I like to be early. Couple things. Let's say it's an audition for a film. I've done these things and I've had auditions for films. And one of the things I look for is someone who is reliable and who I can depend on my crew, right? So if a person shows up early on, you know, that shows initiative that they really want to be part of this project is the first thing it tells me. And two, it tells me that I'm not going to have to worry about, you know, waiting around at the last minute for the person to get here because they're like myself. They're always here on time. If I have a film schedule and I need to film at noon, then I'm probably going to be ready and on site, on the film site, at least by, you know, if not 10:45, then at least 11 o'clock, I'm on site or wherever I'm going to be filming. And that's if I'm filming at noon. That's also if you're talking about just getting ready to go on, you know, site. I honestly feel that a couple hours in advance is probably the best whenever, you know, when you're dealing with filmmaking or entertainment of some kind. I don't think there is a such thing as being too early. And I think there's a lot of benefits to it. One, again, as a film person who makes films and someone who auditions people, I personally look for initiative and how badly someone wants to be part of the project. And if they show up early, then obviously they're committed and they believe in it that much. And also, again, it tells me that they're someone I don't have to chase down. Hey, are you going to be here soon? Especially if you have another day of auditions or if you have something like a table read prior to filming, which I always recommend to other filmmakers out there, whenever you're doing a project, whether it be film or entertainment or whatever the case may be, prior to going and filming, I know in television it's known to have they call it a table read, where the cast will sit down and they'll work out the whole scene reading around a table. With, you know, the cast and crew, and they usually read it out loud, you know, in case the writers have to make changes and so forth. This is a common occurrence in television. But in filmmaking, usually you kind of don't have as much of that as in the sense that, you know, usually with film, you know, the actors are really responsible for knowing all of their lines. And, you know, because there's so many takes of those types of events, usually there's very limited time to make rewrites and so forth into a script. Myself, you know, when I've ever done an audition, for example, and people have showed up early, and if they take some type of initiative, even if I don't necessarily think they'll write for the particular part they're auditioning for, I'll offer them another role. Or as in 9 out of 10 times I've wrote the script that I'm auditioning people for, so if they're good enough, I'll invent a scene and inject it into the film, you know, to reward them and give them that experience to say, hey, thank you for showing up. Just because this is role is a review, this is something I think you can do. And I've done that for a lot of people who have auditioned for my films. And I think that's both respectful of the persons who are taking time to be part of your project, but also yourself, it gives you that also that reassurance that people are willing to, you know, show up for you and are willing to, you know, trust in your creativity that you can come up with a part on the cuff. By the way, I have, and I did. So I'm proud of that moment. Now, let's talk about, you know, other reasons why you want to be early for as far as, you know, filmmaking or in the theater business or entertainment is if you get there early, there's going to be several other people most likely have the same mindset and they're going to be wanting to go and maybe you can get seen early. Maybe you can get your audition done and you might have several auditions you have to do that day. Well, if you come early for one audition and you bang out your audition, you know, and I also encourage people whenever you're auditioning for anything, commit to one at a time as far as the audition goes. Even if you have something else lined up in the same day, make sure you, you know, leave a little bit of room in case there's questions, in case there's something more to the audition. You might have questions. I also respect people who come in with questions for the project that they're willing to commit to, because I'll usually go into what we're going to do, what we're going to be filming, what the project is, where we're looking to go with it. But also, I might talk to them about, you know, something else they might have. I know for The Good Old Boy, when I was working on that, I had people sing on the auditions. And not all of them could, which is cool. But the ones who went that extra mile, I definitely gave them, I invented scenes for most of those people who were willing to do that, or I gave them the part in some aspects of it. Now, there was no real, nothing in the, audition, screening thing. Hey, might be doing some minor singing, which is why I always say whenever you're going for some type of project for an audition, be ready for anything. You don't know what's going to happen. You might have the scene that you're preparing for, and then maybe there's another scene that the director or filmmaker wants you to try out to see if maybe they're not sold on the first one, but maybe the second one. But the other thing also is, if they ask things like, if I want you to sing, why is the reason? Well, for The Good Old Boy, it was a reason. I had envisioned that at the end or beginning of the film, possibly both, that, the lead actor who was The Good Old Boy, Jimmy was the name of the character, he and maybe The Good Old Boy, the big brother, so to speak, which was my character, as well as the woman who would go on to become the mother or the wife of the lead character, Jazz Vengeance. But technically, he was more of a supporting character, more so, because in The Good Old Boy, it was really about, The Good Old Boy's, struggles with society and socialness, and social awkwardness and bullying and so forth, and overcoming those things. Of course, the big brother part of the aspect of the film was he didn't understand why he was so popular and why he was so endured by so many people around the world. He was ignorant to the fact that he was something special that he couldn't see, because like when Jimmy was his age, he struggled because he wasn't the same as everyone else. That's where the two tied in. That's when the two met. And that's why they were kind of the good old boy and his big brother. It wasn't necessarily a blood connection as much as it is they became like brothers because, the hero, hometown hero who comes home, takes this young man under his wing and kind of teach each other lessons. Both the good old boy teaches the big brother why he is so popular and why he is so respected. And then the big brother shows the young man how to be himself and how to, kind of just be okay to be him. And also, stand up for what he believes in and fight for those you care about and love. And of course, the actress who played my wife, obviously I had her sing as well, and she could sing. And she's a very talented individual, and I'm actually pretty much friends with a lot of the people who worked on The Good Old Boy. I still keep in contact with most of them, and they're all tremendous young actors and actresses, and all have different passions before and since. And I commend them all, and I always am respectful of those who took time to work on that project. I think as a filmmaker and as a creator, as someone who, does these in that kind of a business, it's always endearing to me to see how many other people share your same vision. And that was something that I always like to give back to the cast and the crew, which is why, prior to filming and prior to really getting to do anything, we had a lot of social activities to get the cast, so to speak, and the crew kind of familiar with one another, because we are going to be, the kind of the foundation, right? We're going to be the ones who are going to be around each other and make this film. So the best way to do that, if you're supposed to have like a family atmosphere, is to have that almost family-like bond. On set, it was very laid back and very relaxed, but it was also productive at the same time, because everyone has such a chemistry that everyone kind of knew where their spots were. Everyone kind of knew, everyone's role, so to speak, and everyone's willing to step up. our extras went above and beyond. We had some of these, we had extras who showed up time and time again, and I was always respectful of them. The people who showed up to do background work for us. And anytime we ever needed some background, bodies, so to speak, people were willing to show up because of what we did and how we ran our sites. We always made sure there was food on site. For an independent organization, an independent company, and an independent movie like that was, we certainly had we had a certain bracket and a certain amount of things, but we always made sure our crew was hydrated and that, we were fun. We always used to go to Wahlburgers after filming. So shout out to Wahlburgers for always putting us up in their restaurant. The funny part would be, it was after a long day of filming our film, our sets, we'd leave there and we'd go to Wahlburgers where they would be filming an episode of their television show. Now, some of the young actors who wanted that kind of exposure, I guess they wouldn't really care about much, but where they were already spent, 8 hours on site for us working on the film, the last thing you want to do is be on more cameras. And those reality shows, as I do my air quotes, there's so many things that go on, and the last thing they want to do is more camera work after doing the camera work for us all the time. So, but that was always fun, part of the thing, taking everyone out to dinner afterwards, usually at Wahlburgers, like I said, which was a good place for us, I guess, at that time. So that worked. So today is Talking Tuesday. Now, I know I've talked about Talking Tuesday before in the past and kind of what it was. What it was a social media, it was really at the dawn of where social media really began. You see, for myself being, at the time I was, in pro wrestling or in filmmaking, so I was busy nonstop. I didn't have a lot of time to interact with everybody who I was friends with. And I think everyone's guilty of social media, of only really talking to the same kinds of people over and over again. And there's nothing wrong with that. But on Facebook, for example, that's really where it started, and I would see that, I'd have several people I went to elementary school with, or I other fans or friends I've added who I wouldn't get to talk to as much. But they would always ask questions or they'd want to interact. But because of my schedule or whatever, I didn't have that kind of time. And my sister-in-law, shout out to Jen, she'd be listening. My ex-sister-in-law, Jen, she used to call me Dr. Vengeance at the time because my wrestling name was Jen Vengeance at the time. So she would call me Dr. Vengeance because sometimes during a lot of those Talking Tuesdays, I would give guidance or some talking to or some, words of inspiration to someone who's trying to make their own ways and make their own goals. And on Tuesdays, what I decided to do was set aside a certain amount of time once a week, I said. Originally, that was the idea. Set aside some time once a week that I don't have a lot going on. Set aside that time to reach out to the random people I don't normally get to talk to and send them a random message saying, hey, hello, how are you? Happy Talking Tuesday. And then go from there. And if you guys remember how, it's been so long since I've been on Facebook itself, but, you'd have the little conversation window. Well, I would have 7 or 8, 9, 10 of those bars open, having 7, 8, 9, 10 conversations time frame of Talking Tuesday. Talking Tuesday started because, one, Tuesday was slow for me. I didn't have a lot going on a Tuesday night, and it was from 6 to 9 p.m. So I set up a block of time and a day that I could just talk to people, whoever. How you doing? How's your day going? How's life? I'd reach out to those people, answer the questions that people have been asking and had time for, and we dubbed it Talking Tuesday. And of course, Mr. Zuckerberg, gave me the title of knowing to found that term, Talking Tuesday, as a day to really reach out to the people you don't normally get to talk to on a regular basis. And there's the story behind Talking Tuesday. Now, how does it fit on to this podcast is, you know, if you guys have noticed, a lot of the times we've had guests have been on Tuesdays, and we like to introduce you guys to new people. We also like to catch up with old friends, too. And we're going to be having some more guests coming on, and I have some more guests lined up, and we're going to have some, meet some new friends and say hello to some old ones, because that's what we do here. We like to stay in contact with everyone. The FOL headquarters is a safe place that people can be themselves and be celebrated for their contributions to their own goals and dreams, whether it may be in pro wrestling or theater, film, television, dance, combat world, sports, whatever the case may be. We like to, you know, really embrace those things. Like myself, I didn't have that kind of an outlet early in my career. I didn't have social media back in the day. Back when I was, you know, competing in combat sports, what we called freestyle tournaments, doing martial arts, which I competed from age 5 until 18. I competed, and I guess I have a good record. I never really paid attention to it. But I had a pretty decent record. I got one draw, which happened when I was 10. Which I never got over, because there's nothing worse than not knowing who is better than who. That draw really drove me nuts, and it still does, honestly. If you can hear the frustration of my voice over it, then you can tell that there is something that bothers me, having a draw. I would much rather say I have, you know, X amount of wins and a loss than I have X amount of wins and a draw, because it's just, you know, ridiculous. And I guess it's my own ego that lets me get that way, because I am competitive as much as I am respectful. And I also have, you know, being dubbed as sportsmanlike. And I am sportsmanlike. I think I go with a mindset to, you know, have the best, you know, best vision for the team. I'm loyal to my team and my school, my dojo, my masters, and whoever I'm representing at the time. When I played in high school sports, I was loyal to my school, which is why I have several of those awards I posted on social media. The Quincy Pride Award, which is the school's highest honor, which I'm proud of. And I have that. I have about half a dozen of those in three different sports. So I guess I did it right, as I did play multiple sports in school. Actually, I don't think there's a sport I didn't try at least once. Some, of course, I like more than others. And I think sports is something that is easy for people to adapt to, because it's something that I think a lot of people can relate to and a great way to socialize. But, of course, there's other ways you can socialize, and there's other activities people can do. A lot of people don't know I did some off-Broadway and some stage work in my teenage years, as well as did combat sports, as well as I did sports. So I had a lot going on when I was a young teenager, because I was constantly busy. Why was I constantly busy is because I never wanted to be home. I wanted to be active, and I got more respect from outside people, my peers, both at schools or at the dojo or out in public. I got more respect and more you know, whatever, from those people than I did my own blood. And I felt more comfortable on a mat or on a stage than I did in front of my, you know, with my family, which is, you know, sad if you think about it. But it's also, if you knew my family out there, you could probably also understand it as well. So it's pretty epic. I haven't been on Facebook in a little while, and then we were just talking about, you know, Talking Tuesday in history. And a lot of people wonder, like, why I don't go on social media anymore. Why aren't I on Facebook? Why don't I go to, you know, this or that? And I think a lot of the reasons are because I don't have time for the social media I have now, let alone have time for, you know, any of those other things, Facebook or whatever. See, Facebook now is out of the question, because for me, what I've noticed is a trend on Facebook where everyone usually is complaining about something or posting about something. And I'm someone who likes to take action versus, you know, complain about something. And I'm someone who, you know, is more about celebrating positive things and relenting negative things, because I think there's plenty of people out there who are willing to put the negative things out there in the world. Not enough people doing the good things for the world, trying to, you know, promote positiveness in the world, which is why this podcast exists. I started this podcast in 2020 when everyone else in the world was kind of upset and crawling into themselves and didn't appreciate the time with their families and their friends, their close family and friends, and people who were quite content with just sitting around and complaining about what are they going to do versus just doing something. And where everyone was talking about the negative things in the world, I said there's plenty of good things you can talk about in the world. There's plenty of positiveness out there to spread. There's plenty of people who are out there making their goals happen and accomplishing their dreams than worrying about all this sadness in the world that, yeah, of course, we're not stupid. We know these things are going on, but we don't have to constantly be able to drive it into people's faces. It's not something that is helpful or you know, is socially helpful to anyone. We have, you know, being a husband and a father, a lot of the things, you know, we hear and we see, you know, being a father trying to explain, and you know, granted, my kids, when all the craziness really started, you know, our kids were older. But I think still to an extent, we as adults, we as parents need to take some credibility and we need to take some ownership to the simple fact that it's not all sunshine and rainbows and that it is not just what it should be. It's not, you know, life isn't as bad as people make it out to be. And the problem is too many people forget those things. And that's what's sad in the world. And that's why I think a lot of the times people need to be okay with themselves, be proud of who they are, and, you know, stand up for what they believe in, ultimately. So that's where I stand on that. Because I don't believe that people need to be constantly negative and worrying about negativity all of the time. Because as a parent, like I said, it doesn't do anything but freak our kids out. And that's not fair to them. Because they're not able to process things like adults can. Heck, a lot of parents, adults I know, can't process the things of the world, let alone our younger people in the world. So there's that. So in hindsight, always go with positivity. That's where the show started. To give people a positive outlook on things in general, because that's where it should be. Now, let's take it to another level there. So Monster Mania is coming into play. It's coming up at the end of the month, this month. I like to try to get everything, all the important stuff out before I, you know, talk about some film reviews and things of that nature. But let's talk about Monster Mania right quick, our friends at the Hagans. And this time it's coming from Hunt Valley, Maryland, at the Delta Marriott Inn in Hunt Valley, Maryland, of course, hence the name. And they had a huge addition to Monster Mania, making this first. Actually, there's quite a few first-time Monster Mania people coming. One person in particular, Brandon Fraser. You guys may or may not remember Brandon Fraser. I don't think anybody who grew up in the 90s doesn't remember who Brandon Fraser is, because he was almost in like everything in the 90s. He was like the go-to. If you needed someone in a 90s movie, you go get Brandon Fraser, because he brought it. He did things that ranged from With Honors, one of my favorite movies, Encino Man, The Mummy, 1 and 2. I don't know if he came back to the other ones, but I know he's in the original Mummy series, 1 and 2. He was in Back to the Future, Blast from the Past, which my kids really enjoyed, with him and Alicia Silverstone, probably one of her other films that a lot of people forgot about from her career. And he was, in several films back in the 90s, almost in everything. He did a cameo spot in Now and Then with my ex-wife, Christina Ricci. That's a joke. And then, he did a lot of things. And he kind of, took some time off or whatever. And he's really had a resurgence in the last couple of years. He was just in a movie where he got a standing ovation called The Whale, which he was committed to doing the role and stuff like that. And kudos to him. I think Brandon Fraser might be one of the most underrated people in Hollywood because in the 90s, he was the go-to guy you'd want to go to get tickets sold and to carry your film. And I think he can be that guy again. I don't see any reason why Brandon Fraser can't, and I'll tell him so when I see him in Hunt Valley, Maryland from September 30th through the 2nd of October is when Monster Mania 51 is going to be. Joining Brandon Fraser at Monster Mania, you'll see the likes of Malcolm McDowell from things like The Clockwork Orange and the Rob Zombie's Halloween as Dr. Loomis. He was in a fantastic television show I just recently found, and now all of a sudden I can't remember what it's called, but it was a fantastic little television show he was part of where the family was living. It was like a period piece set in, I think, the 80s, and it was set up like a Wonder Years style where the kid was reminiscing growing up in Newfoundland. I'm going to talk to Malcolm McDowell about that. He's also a sweetheart of an individual. I've met him several times. He's a really good guy. Also, Clint Howard's making his first Monster Mania appearance. Clint Howard, the younger brother of Ron Howard, actor, producer Ron Howard. Clint Howard was in films like The Ice Cream Man, and a lot of the times his brother will, fit him into a lot of the different movies. You'll see Clint making little cameos in various, Ron Howard films. He did start out with, Ron Howard on the Andy Griffith Show, much like where he started out on, really became household name from there. But, Clint Howard will be there, as well as Mark Burnham. As well as Alicia Crave. These are three individuals who are going to be making their first Monster Mania appearances as part of, the celebrations and so forth. Andrew Robinson also making his first Monster Mania appearance, which is exciting. Joining the craze, Pinhead himself, Doug Bradley, is going to be there. Chris Sarandon, who you might know from leading the voice of Jack from Nightmare Before Christmas, as well as the evil prince Princess Bride with Carrie Elves. But Chris Sarandon will be there. He's been a lot of other things, folks. I'm really underselling Chris Sarandon's career. He's had a stellar career, Chris Sarandon. He's still going strong. Also, William Ridesdale, Rose Jackson, Chris Cyphers, Nancy Keys, Tom Targa, Aaron Armstrong, Tom Jones Jr., Richard Blake, Jeffrey Dean Phillips, and Daniel Robeck. Both of those individuals, by the way, are going to be featured in the new Rob Zombie's Monsters reboot. And I'll tell you, don't get too close to that. They look just like, Fred Gwynne does and Al Lewis, respectively, as they who perpetrated them in the early days, as well as Wellington Gellett, who was Jason Voorhees, for those people who don't know, and Quinn Lord, who you may not know. Quinn Lord is a younger, smaller actor who is more known as, the evil spirit of Sam from the Trick or Treat series. And he's done a lot of other work too, but my family's, big fans of the, I guess you'd call it a cult classic, Trick or Treat, where he was Sam. And he's kind of part of pulp culture. I wonder if he knows this. And I guess he's going to be doing a in-costume photo shoot as well as Sam. So there you go. As well as the usual staples of Martha Mania, Scott Jackson, who does all of the amazing artwork and has designed the amazing Monster Mania posters and booklet. By the way, that new image is out today. It looks fantastic. And the guys from Living Dead Comics also going to be taking part, as always, which is good to see them as well. And by the way, just a programming note for Ken Page. Ken Page, unfortunately, who played Oogie Boogie in Nightmare Before Christmas and most of other things, he has had to sadly postpone his timing due to work. He's filming. So I guess there's good news, bad news. The bad news is he won't be able to be here this time. He will be there eventually. But he is filming, so at least he's working. That's a good thing. And that's coming to you at Monster Mania 51. Also, you couldn't forget Soraya, a.k.a. Paige from WWE, who is going to be appearing on Saturday only. So if you guys ever want to meet Paige, or the woman who the movie It Runs in the Family is based on, or it's a family thing, rather, I think it's called, that's where that's from. She is the... That's who the film is based upon, is Soraya or Paige from WWE. Go check her out. She'll be there on Saturday only. So there's that. And, of course, Monster Mania 52 will be coming after you right after that in Oaks, Pennsylvania. This is their second show there. And it's from November 11th to the 13th, as I said, Oaks, Pennsylvania. The master himself, the gentleman known as Robert Englund, I have to say, out of anyone I've ever met, and I've been fortunate enough to meet some very awesome people, and a lot of these people I just mentioned are also fantastic humans, but this gentleman here is a class act of a person you can meet. If you ever get the opportunity to do so, I recommend it. In November 11th through the 13th in Oaks, Pennsylvania, at Monster Mania 52, you get your chance. The incredible Robert Englund is back. Freddie's back at Monster Mania at Cherry Hill at Oaks, Pennsylvania, 52. As well as lead singer, frontman of Slipknot, Corey Taylor, as well as they're doing a little bit of a Dream Warriors remake, reboot, or a reunion of sorts, as Heather Langenkamp, who famously plays the original bad girl of Nightmare, as she's Freddie's original I guess she's his hero to his, you know, she's his final girl, but Heather Langenkamp was the first one to take the fight to Freddy as Heather Langenkamp makes her return to Monster Mania in Oaks at 52, as well as Ken Sargos, Penelope Sodro, Jennifer Rubin, Rodney Eastman, Bradley Gregg, and Ira Heiden. As I said, they're doing a Dream Masters reunion or Dream Warriors reunion, and that's awesome considering the show, Dream Warriors and Dream Masters, and it's pretty cool, right? And that's what we call our superstars on our YouTube wrestling show, and it's not really associated with that, but that's probably one of my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street franchise movies is Dream Warriors and Dream Masters, just because of kind of what it talks about and what it goes into exploring, which is something that has kind of been experimented on and talked about more today as the lucid dreaming, which is when you have the art of controlling your own dreams, which is kind of cool. But in addition to that, also David Morrissey, the governor himself, coming all the way from, well, actually, I guess the governor isn't around anymore, but he was in Atlanta, formerly the governor of Woodbury, before losing his head, so to speak. But David Morrissey is going to be in hand, coming all the way from England. This is his first Monster Mania appearance. And with The Walking Dead really coming to an end this year, that's kind of iconic, really, to meet the governor and to meet someone from The Walking Dead you may not have had the opportunity to meet yet. That's kind of cool. I know I'm excited for Duncan Rigger, as well as Ashley Brinks from Monster Squad. Anyone who knows my fandom for Monster Squad, one of the best, I guess you'd say, teenage horror movies. I guess there's stages of horror movies. We'll have to go into that later in October or something with where horror movies kind of stand as far as a breaking point to horror movies versus a full-fledged horror movie or whatever. I think Monster Squad is one of those films that, as a parent, I could let my kids watch and not worry too much about a lot of bad things as far as a horror movie goes. Obviously, use your own judgment. Parents know their own kids. My kids handled it fine. And actually, my son's really not into horror movies. I know, shock. But he can actually dig Monster Squad and the, you know, campiness that it is. And I enjoyed it, too. It's a cult classic, and it still is. Also, my good friend Tyler Mayne. I'm going to see if I can get Tyler Mayne on the show. That'd be interesting. Tyler Mayne, famously, who played either Sabretooth or Rob Zombie's Michael Myers, is going to be at hand. And Tyler Mayne is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in person. But here's something you might not know about. He and I bonded over our, you know, backgrounds in pro wrestling, because before Tyler Mayne was, you know, leading his singing voice in, was that Fire, Pants on Fire with John Cena, or in, like I said, Rob Zombie's Halloween, or before he was Sabretooth, he was a pro wrestler for WCW. So Tyler Mayne and I have some ties as being pro wrestlers, so that's kind of cool. Also, Michael Bradley Smith, and, of course, the voice of the Crypt Keeper himself, John Kazier, James Albar, who is the comic book master behind The Crow, so he'll be at hand. And, of course, there's always more to come at Monster Mania. Always expect the unexpected at Monster Mania. And, again, those are coming up. First one is October. Is September 30th through the 2nd of October. That is for the Monster Mania Convention 51 in Hunt Valley, Maryland. So that's coming up soon. Also, I should mention on that show, I'm not sure if I ever mentioned their names, and I'm sorry if I didn't, but Anthony Michael Hall as well as James Jude Courtney will also be at hand. And, of course, you know, also two individuals who are fantastic to meet. Especially Anthony Michael Hall, being a fellow Bostonian and all. Go say hi to Anthony Michael Hall. And whatever you do, give him Saturday morning detention. You'll be good to go. Anyway, Anthony Michael Hall and him will be there in October. As I said, September 30th through October 2nd in Hunt Valley, Maryland. And everyone else I just mentioned from Robert England on will be in Oaks, Pennsylvania at Monster Mania 52. And that's November 11th through the 13th. Sadly, I will be missing my own son's birthday, but he knows that I love him. I'll do the phone video call thing, and I'll celebrate when I get back. And he told me to bring him a shirt, so I will. And probably something else, too. I mean, his birthday and all. He's going to be 20 to make me feel even older than I already am. So quick happy birthday out to him. So that's the Monster Mania news for upcoming events. And, yes, I will be there as well. So I guess add on, if you go to any of those events, you'll also see me busy working as I normally do for everything. So there's that. So, yeah, come say hi to me and everyone at Monster Mania. So that's the Monster Mania, as I said. As far as entertainment goes, let's see, entertainment news. You know, I found out recently that our friend Michael Fishman isn't coming back for the next season of Roseanne, of the Conners. And I don't think I was as upset as I think a lot of other people might be, because I know that Michael Fishman is an amazing, accomplished individual, and he has so many talents. And I also believe that he has a lot of things that he is going to be able to accomplish and so forth. And I think his departing and the way he's departing is absolutely commendable and respectful and done in a respectful manner. And we here at the show wish him the best, as long live DJ Connor forever. We'll have to get Michael Fishman maybe to come back to the show and talk to us about what it's like not to be coming back to the show. But I think that from the messages he's been talking about and so forth, I think that he's okay. I think he's going to be fine. And I think he's got a lot of amazing projects in the works, and I commend him. And, of course, this show, we always respect our fellow FRL. So shout out to Michael Fishman and wish him the best in whatever he chooses to do. As I mentioned, the Connors is coming back to TV soon, but how many people are already done binge-watching Cobra Kai already? Well, don't tell me anything because I'm only 2 episodes in. Why am I only 2 episodes in? Well, because the last time Cobra came out a couple of years ago, I made the mistake of binge-watching it in one day, and then I had to wait a whole year before more Cobra Kai came back. And spoiler alert, I do know the Cobra Kai is being split into these several episodes, and then the next season, so to speak, kicks off in December. So the reason why I am going to slow build it is because I want it to last. So I am 2 episodes in. So far, I'm digging it. I like to see the chemistry there. I like a lot of the familiar faces are back. Always good to see them there. William Zabka, always a BA, forever a BA, leading down, whether it be Eagle Fang or, you know, taking down Cobra Kai or giving Daniel LaRusso a dose of real love or whatever. It's great to see William Zabka doing something awesome. You know, of course, that's, you know, Johnny Lawrence, for those people who go by actors, characters' names versus their real names. And, of course, in this one here, Chosen has come back to the fold to help Daniel LaRusso, quote, take down Cobra Kai, because Terry Silva is too much of a threat, I guess. And I hear rumors that Mike Barnes is supposed to be making his return. Mike Barnes was the villain in part, which Terry Silva also made his debut in the Karate Kid series. Chosen, of course, is the villain from part two. I know, go figure. The villain from part two, who once tried to kill Daniel LaRusso, is now going to be joining side by side with Daniel LaRusso. I don't know if I trust all that, but that's going to be a thing in this season. So is that. There's already been several fights already. I like to see that, you know, Robbie Kigger, I think it's his name. It might not be his name. I'm confusing him with someone else. But the kid who plays Robbie Keane in the show, he's stepping up to be part of the, you know, give his dad a chance finally. And I like that the first 2 episodes are really about the two of them kind of bonding and learning each other that, you know, maybe his father wasn't as jerkish as he thought he was, but also the young man who didn't really know a lot about his dad or what he was doing or what lengths his dad did. And I thought it was awesome that his dad mentioned that, you know, even though you think I'm a scumbag, I didn't care about you much, don't think that because I always do. And there's plenty of things you don't know. And I think one of the biggest problems with Cobra Kai for me is the lack of communications and how many problems would be avoided if certain conversations were to take place. For example, Daniel LaRusso's daughter in the very first episode of Cobra Kai trashed Johnny Lawrence's car. Johnny Lawrence had to go to Daniel LaRusso's auto sale. It's a weird dynamic. It's an auto dealer, but I guess they do repairs as well. And I don't think there's any indication that John Lawrence ever bought this car from Dan LaRusso's auto shop, because I can't see him ever doing that. So I don't actually know why that was where they had to bring his car. But anyway, I guess that was also for the script to get Dan LaRusso and John Lawrence together. But why Johnny Lawrence didn't talk to Dan LaRusso and say how his daughter is the one who trashed his car and the reason why he had to be there to begin with is beyond me, because that would have kind of raised some red flags that their family isn't so perfect. The fact that Dan LaRusso's son, who has pretty much nothing to do with anybody in the first 2.5 seasons, and when we find him in season 3, he's a bully to another kid, which talk about roles reversing, but his son's a bully on part 3 and mouthing off to giving other kids a hard time, bullying the new student who goes on to become Cobra Kai's newest sensation, I guess you'd say. And let's not forget, you know, the reasons why Cobra Kai existed. Cobra Kai took a bunch of people who were getting bullied in school. Miguel was someone who was, you know, having a rough time. Hawk, Eli, whatever his name was. You know, Eli is his, you know, first name. But he was really picked on and bullied through the first couple of seasons. That's why he went to Cobra Kai, and he became an absolute beast. Of course, he went a little bit overboard. But I think that the dynamic here is kind of the culture curve is how everyone's going. I got to say, I showed my wife today, even though I know she's not huge into Cobra Kai, but I was pointing out that Peyton List, who plays Tori on the show, what an amazing 360 from this Disney character from the Disney shows that our kids used to watch growing up, being this kind of blonde, kind of whatever, like kind of floating in the sky is how she was perceived, to being this kind of BA girl who has a rough time and is not afraid to fight for what she believes in or the ones she loves. And again, a lot of conflicts would not be a thing if communication was present anywhere with the adults or the kids or in general. I think if there was more communication there, there would be a lot less conflict and probably a lot less fights. I've been involved in martial arts for many years. As I said, as a young kid, I started studying martial arts when I was about 4. I had my first competition when I was 5. So those tournaments that they have in like Cobra Kai, there's like one in the regional every year. I think anyone who's ever competed can tell you there's several of those events that happen almost every city, almost every region, all over the place, almost every single weekend. And I always find it amazing how there's not more of those events going on in these events. And I'm wondering if there was more of those, if there would be less time for fights outside of the schools. Because when you're, you know, taking on other schools like we were, you would take on other, you know, other martial art dojos when we're doing these competitions. And yeah, at the events, you know, you obviously want your school to win, your dojo to win, but there was none of this outside bitter rivalry going on either. I've never had this cutthroat relationship with people outside off the mat, as I've always believed any problems on the mat should stay on the mat, and you don't leave until the conflict's resolved. That's a firm belief I believe. To the extent where you know, there was a young man who I used to see at all the events, and he went on to, you know, leave his dojo. He started teaching Taekwondo, which is not something I studied. I studied several other different things. This individual went and had a passion for Taekwondo, and he opened up a Taekwondo studio in my hometown, oddly enough. And I would go by. I still can go by there, and he still runs the place. And if I see him, he'll give a wave. I'll give a wave. And, you know, it's kind of one of those, you know, old kind of battle rivalry kind of things. I used to play football against your team kind of, you know, things, but there's nothing like animosity between him and I. As you kind of grow over those things, that's something is real in martial arts that I find, where there's this bitter rivalry with another school. I think UFC sometimes has these over-the-top, you know, personalities that can conflict with each other's camps, as that's what they call them. But that's more because you have a person who's usually biting off more than they can chew, and it's also one-on-one, and it's in between things. And the same thing goes for, like, WWE. Obviously, that's more theatrical, so you're going to have people who are going to be good guys and bad guys, and, you know, that's how it's crafted. But, again, in real life, some of the biggest villains with each other are probably the best of friends I can tell you this, are the best friends outside and backstage, which I don't like to break the kayfabe too much, but that is something that, you know, a lot of people have a hard time grasping. But I also believe in keeping it old school. And if you have a rival on camera, then you probably shouldn't be seeing each other on camera. You know, if you have a heated rivalry with a person in wrestling, and you know, then you probably shouldn't be seen hanging out with that person where there's other people going to be around, because that's just that time, and it blows up the whole business. So don't do that. But in general, there's no, you know, rivalries like you'll see on Cobra Kai, where this school's tougher than this school, and this school has a rivalry with that school. And, you know, Miyagi-Go karate wouldn't even be a dojo if it wasn't for Cobra Kai being reestablished. And again, that wouldn't even be a conflict if Danny LaRusso had slowed down a second to talk to Johnny Lawrence civilly, and both of them kind of talking to each other civilly, than this macho, you know, Danny LaRusso not believing that people can be redeemed versus someone being a jerk and versus, you know, whatever. Initially, I wasn't interested in Cobra Kai because I heard, you know, I'm all set with the whole Karate Kid thing because back in the 80s, I found it to be absolutely false from what I knew to be martial arts. But now, as I'm older and I can appreciate art and I can appreciate, you know, theatrics, I can separate the two. But I definitely wouldn't be watching Karate Kid or Cobra Kai to learn the next, to learn how to become a better fighter or to pick up what moves to do, because that's not realistic. The things they do in those shows are not realistic. They're not realistic scenarios. I think some of the family dynamics you can definitely encounter. Definitely bullying is a thing. Definitely people take martial arts because of bullying. And I also believe you sometimes do have to stand your ground against those bullies because sometimes they don't know when to quit. But I also think that there's smarter ways to deal with things, as ways to get people involved where you don't need to go to that extent. The object of learning martial arts is to, oddly enough, not to be able to use them. You learn more in martial art class of how to deflect a situation, then you need to know how to, you know, put on several wrist locks and knock someone out with 700 kicks. That's really not what martial arts is about. What this show kind of emulates is that, you know, fists and kicks is how you deal with all of your life issues. And some conflicts can be definitely dealt rationally that don't result in fisticuffs all the time. Sometimes the art of sarcasm or the art of just using your verbal skills can get you out of a situation that you don't want to be in. I have done these things. I've used my own words to back myself out of a situation and back people down from the conflict. Because two things are going to happen. One, someone's going to get hurt, whether it's me or them, and I don't want that on my conscience. So that's the biggest reason. But anywho, that's Cobra Kai. That's come back. I'm taking it my time with that. There's a bunch of other shows coming back. So as far as movies go, haven't really seen anything over the top as of yet that worth talking about to an extent. My wife and I, that's proper English. My wife and I did see the movie Bullet Train with well, I guess I can't really specify one person, right? That's one of those movies that has several people involved in it. Everyone from Brad Pitt to Bad Bunny making a cameo appearance and all kinds of people in between. My wife enjoyed it. I don't really think it made much of an impact on me to give you guys a full report. Brad Pitt is doing Brad Pitt action stuff. There's some comedy thrown in there. Yeah, it was a little bit far-fetched, and you kind of knew where everything was kind of heading. And so I guess in the long scheme of things, I wasn't overly sold on it as much as she was. But then again, I'm a tougher critic on films than she is. She watches films and television to be entertained. I don't watch film and television. I study film and television. Not to say I don't get enjoyment out of the television shows or movies that I watch when there are those that are worth doing so, but Bullet Train wasn't something that I would overly say that I could overly endorse in one way or the other. I know the Chucky's coming back, season 2. That's for the Child's Play TV series. I'm all in on that. I'll watch that when it comes out and becomes available. Walking Dead's coming out in the final season. Is coming up in a very short number of weeks, I guess. And that's going to be kind of TV history as another iconic television moment comes to a head as that's coming to an end, The Walking Dead, after something that's been around for many years. Some people have been around since its birth. Some people have been around since you know, as long as it's been around. And some people have been around, you know, read the comics before watching the series. And I think a lot of people left the series a long time ago. And I am certainly guilty of not being able to watch every single episode of every single season. But it's definitely something that I do feel that is a cultural phenomenon that it needs to be addressed, that should be celebrated. Just like, you know, Sons of Anarchy, The Brady Bunch. I know that's a huge jump, Breaking Bad. These are things that people dedicated their nights around, that they needed a whole talk show after the show to talk about what happened. The reason they do those shows is because of how impactful they are on a social pop culture phenomenon, because of how many people would take to social media to talk about, hey, did you see what Carol and Daryl did this week? And that's kind of how it would go. And, you know, you back in the heyday of The Walking Dead, I'd say really up until season three, that's when you'd still see people constantly up saying something on their media feeds or whatever. Hey, did you catch what, you know, Daryl did today? And, you know, blowing the whole episode for people who haven't seen it yet on that Sunday. Now, for me personally, I was on a bowling league on Sunday nights, but I always thought it was awesome that they had the rebroadcast of the final of the prior of the new episode right after that current episode of Talking Dead. So if I missed The Walking Dead at, you know, 10 o'clock, the new episode, I could easily watch it after the fact when I got home, because I'd definitely be home by one when the next when the same episode would replay, and then I'd be all caught up. But I also found that I do enjoy enjoy having the no commercials also. So I get the DVDs when they come out on sale or whatever. I get the series on DVD when they'd come out and just watch at my leisure, which is the best way, in my opinion, to do it. But now with all the streaming services, there's really no need for DVDs. You just go to one of your streaming services and do the same thing. My family, we have several different subscriptions, everything from Hulu to Disney. Well, through Hulu, we have Disney Plus, we have Showtime, we have HBO Max and ESPN Plus, which I think my son and I are the only ones who use that. My wife uses probably Disney Plus more than everybody else. Same thing goes for my daughter. Then everyone kind of uses Hulu here and there. And then we also have, you know, Prime, we have Netflix, we have Peacock, we have Paramount Plus we just signed up for. I haven't had enough experience with it to give a real analysis. Here's what I can tell you. I don't feel that if you're paying for a service of any kind, I think commercials are bogus. I think if you're going to have something where you're going to have commercials, then they should be at either the beginning or the end of an episode. Like if you have a series on one of those services, I think that maybe if you're going to have a commercial, have it on before the episode and after the episodes. Because when you sit there and you're paying for a subscription, you have to now watch paid advertisements for it. That's kind of double dipping. And I think that that is kind of bogus in my own opinion. And all the services I just mentioned, they seem to have that as a thing. Hulu that we have, as well as the Disney Plus and the HBO, we don't have commercials involved with any of those. But instead, it was for ESPN Plus. But for Peacock, there's commercials there. Even if you have the best package, which we have, you still have to get commercials regardless. And the same thing goes for Paramount Plus. And to me, that's kind of bogus because it takes away the fun aspect of it. Netflix, you know, doesn't have commercials, obviously. And if they do, it's before or after. And all honesty, Amazon Prime has just started where they show a commercial in the beginning of the episode or movie you're going to watch. And even then, you have the option to skip that commercial. Then you don't see another one until after. So, you know, people need to – these streaming services really need to take heed with that, because I'm actually surprised there's not a lot more people upset about the fact that you're paying for something for your own private use, but you still have to pay to use that service, but you're also having to watch commercials on top of that. When, let's say you had HBO or Showtime back in the day, you have to pay for those, but you wouldn't get commercials. That's kind of why you had cable television, get away from commercials. So I don't know who thought it was a good idea to do it this way, but it might be something they don't want to look at to kind of go away from or changing how they do them. I know that in this household, one of the biggest jokes, on Fridays, it's a ritual for me to go on YouTube to watch upcoming trailers for films and television that are coming up. So that way there I can stay up to par. Is there things out there that I want to enjoy? You know, are there things I'm looking forward to seeing? So on Fridays, I'll watch all the upcoming trailers and TV shows coming up. And it doesn't make any sense to me as you're watching trailers for films that are commercials or ads. They break that up with commercials of their own in between the commercials that you're watching. That makes no sense to me. You're watching commercials. Why are you going to watch commercials for watching your commercial? That doesn't make sense. But they do it anyway. I guess the way around that is to get the YouTube premium so you don't have to watch commercials in the middle of your commercials, which, again, that sounds ridiculous to even say or fathom, but it is a thing. So there's that. As far as pro wrestling news goes, you know, a couple big things have been, you know, happening, a lot of big rumors and stuff like that. Here's the first thing I'm going to say, being someone who's from the pro wrestling world. When it comes to journalists who report things from their, quote, sources, never listen to any of those. Half of those are all made up, malarkey opinions that people put as some type of fact. Some of the times those journalists, so-called journalists, will, you know, come up with their own kind of gossip and tell, we call that armchair booking. They'll you know, offer something where they think the storyline is going, or they'll say something they think the way something's going to happen. And when it doesn't, you know, first of all, they'll credit it to be a source that told them this. But then when it doesn't go that way, they'll say, oh, they changed the plan at the very last minute to cover their own tail. But they're just liars. They're gossip people. Don't listen. So there used to be three ways to get your news back in the day. It used to be telegram, which was the old mail service, telegraph, which is even older than that, and then telewrestler is how you spread your news. And telephone is the other one. You call someone, hey, guess what happened? And then telegraph. That's an old locker room joke. But basically, word spreads quick in a locker room. Everyone talks about everything. If something's noteworthy as far as wrestling goes, other wrestlers will talk about themselves in the locker rooms. Those things will be discussed. That's a fact. But, you know, these people who go out there and say, well, this is happening, that I have people like that jackalope, Dave Meltzer of The Observer. To me, the Wrestling Observer News is nothing more than a wrestling form of the National Enquirer. If you guys remember, that was that old dirt magazine they used to get on entertainment news where they'd say, you know, Brad Pitt and Elizabeth Taylor are having a love affair or something like that. To me, the Wrestling Observer has the same merit as the Enquirer's News because it's the same kind of source. It's the same kind of rumor mill stories. You know, so-and-so, Macaulay Culkin's outside smoking a joint, gets banned from concert. But, you know, the wrestlers will, you know, these wrestling so-called journalists will sit there and spin that story. You know, so-called wrestler, you know, gets popped for the DUI and whatever else. It's all lies. Don't ever listen to the dirt sheet writers. I don't care who they are. If you want to learn something about wrestling, listen to a credible person from wrestling. They'll tell you how it is straight up. Okay, that's what I'm going to tell you first of all. Listen to responsible people who are in wrestling business as well. Don't listen to people who have an agenda or who are biased from one or the other. Look for someone who's going to tell you straight up how it is, one way or the other. And I know a lot of people don't like some of the people who I actually listen to. And some of those people might not like each other. But I respect them because they were in the business longer than I was, first of all. But also because they have the same view I have on a lot of the things. And anyone who's ever been in the wrestling business, who's ever spent time both in the ring or outside of the ring trying to put on the best product for their fans, in a safe and meaningful way, those are the people you should be listening to versus these people who don't matter to anyone. And listening to these people who have never set foot in the ring, never put together a wrestling show, but they'll tell you how to run one. Guys like Jim Cornette are a good source. I believe that Jim Cornette, some people might find offensive. Some people find him abrasive. Some people find him offensive, aggressive. But what he is honest. And what he is passionate about the wrestling business. And you know what? We need more people with some balls like Jim Cornette who will hold people accountable when they do stupid crap. Sorry about my language on these wrestling events. Guys like, you know, a lot of the people don't know Dutch Mantel. Dirty Dutch Mantel is a great source of information and a great source of knowledge for people who are willing to listen to someone who knows a lot about the wrestling business, both in the ring, outside the ring, how to run the stuff, how to write the stuff. Dutch Mantel might be someone who you might want to listen to. And a lot of people have their ideas about certain people, but Dirty Dutch Mantel has a great ideas and mindset. Jim Cornette has a great mindset as far as unbiased. He'll give people props when they earn it, but he'll hold people accountable when they don't deserve it. And that's what the wrestling business needs, more people like that. Another person, I know this sounds opposite, I really enjoy Bruce Pritchard as well. I know that sounds odd because you can't like someone who's putting on a product a lot of people don't agree with. And I know a lot of people don't like Bruce Pritchard. A lot of people don't know who Bruce Pritchard is. Bruce Pritchard, most famously, is on-air character known as Brother Love back in the 90s and the 80s. But what a lot of people don't know is Bruce Pritchard is one of the best minds in WWE. And a lot of people like to, you know, say that a lot of his bad ideas get out there. But also, Bruce Pritchard has some great ideas. And he's honest about whatever. And he also is honest about when things don't make sense. He can call things the things that are not real. And I think we need to be careful about other people's opinions who aren't necessarily from the wrestling business. And now a lot of people don't like John Bradshaw Layfield because they heard a lot of rumors about him being a bully and stuff like that. I wasn't in those locker rooms back then, but I can tell you this. I've talked with John Bradshaw Layfield, and I know the people who he's associated with. I worked with a lot of those guys. I worked with Joey Styles, you know, and – but I'm also come from a different cloth where I understand I understand sarcasm. I understand when someone's busting someone's balls. I don't have a weak skin. I can be just as sarcastic and just as jokey as, you know, anybody else can. I can take jokes as much as I can give them. I think that if you're in the wrestling business, if you don't expect someone to, you know, give you a hard time or make a joke once in a while, then you're probably in the wrong business. And I have nothing but respect for Joey Styles and a lot of these other guys, but John Bradshaw Layfield, when I've had any interaction with him, has nothing been respectful. And Gerald Briscoe, one half of the Briscoe brothers, one of the greatest tag teams and promoting teams of the world, and also one of the founders and one of the really behind-the-scenes impactful people to the WWE for a number of years, is someone who I'd much rather listen to than people who have never been in the wrestling business talking about wrestling, a bunch of marketing around the microphone. And that also being said, I think it's important to listen to fans who are also honest with both what they want and what they don't want. And people who are willing to listen, guys like the guys at Technical Work Radio, we've talked about them before, and eventually they're going to come on the show and we'll chat with them about it. But, you know, there are guys on YouTube who will, you know, really express what they don't like about the business and be honest about it. They're wrestling fans who understand what the wrestling business is supposed to be. They came from the same era. I watched wrestling before I got into wrestling. And again, they hold accountable the marks of the world, the smarks of the world, the people who are keyboard warriors behind the scene. These people who want more of these high flying matches than good quality matches, people who champion these people who aren't trained properly, who are causing more injuries and harms and fights and unprofessionalism for wrestling. These are the kinds of people who stand up for those people like us who grew up in the business where you wanted to be in the wrestling business. You went to a wrestling school. You got properly trained. You got broken in the real way. Not this, I learned outside of my trampoline, and now I'm going to go sign with a billion-dollar company. For a guy who doesn't know anything about pro wrestling, but is just a wrestling fan, we know who I'm talking about. And I'm curious, how much is Dad's going to put up with? That's something I think that should be also brought into light. A lot of people talk about Tony Khan, the owner of AEW. But what a lot of people don't know is he gets his money from his dad. It's his dad's money that will give him his money to perform these things. And what you also don't know is these, the Khans, Tony Khan and Shere Khan, who has his, you know, who's the father of Tony Khan, they own several other sports organizations. Now, here's my question. How have any of those teams ever done? I asked this question way before we even saw any kind of anything from AEW. On Thursday, I'm going to do a I Told You So episode, which I don't normally like to. But we're going to do an I Told You So episode on Thursday, so be looking for that. So I'm not going to go too deep into this, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to revisit some old videos that I made on YouTube, statements I had made before AEW aired. And we're going to find out what has gone on since then. Did anything I say turn out to be correct? Am I full of nonsense? Was I lying about anything I said? And did I have everything pegged wrong? We're going to find out. Because on Thursday, I'm going to dig up those clips. I'm going to bring out those videos, and I'm going to air them right here on this show on Thursday. And we're going to find out what I said, when I said it, and how it went. So be looking for that on Thursday, on our Throwback Thursday episode, as we're going to look at pro wrestling, I guess, on this Thursday. And kind of, I'm going to say a little bit about my, you know, my coming up into pro wrestling, because I think that's important, too, to learn that not everything in life is handed to you. You don't just go outside and start doing flips in the backyard trampoline and become a pro wrestler. There's a lot more that goes into that. And that's why so many people are getting injured, so many people have the wrong idea, and so many people are laughing at the wrestling business. That's why the wrestling business looks the way it does right now. Because too many people look at this way that these modern wrestlers look at it, and that needs to go away. And to Adam Page, is that Page? Who said he doesn't need to listen to veterans or listen to people's old advice. I second CM Punk when I say, who are you? Good luck telling. People are really coming down hard on CM Punk as of late. But is it possible that we're looking at the wrong person here involved in this, you know, tragedy in AEW? I want to call it spade a spade. If it wasn't for CM Punk coming into AEW not long ago, AEW probably wouldn't be around right now. What you don't know is your ratings in AEW have dropped significantly. When CM Punk is on TV, the ratings go up. Your viewership goes up. Your houses go up. When CM Punk is not there, you have empty seats. No one is interested in your shows. No one's interested in Kenny Omega. No one is interested in the Young Bucks. No one is interested in these people that no one outside of your own tight-knit New Japan, barely TNA outfit understand or know. People who want real names are going to be looking for the names. That's all they're going to be looking for. And you have a locker room full of these. I think CM Punk said everything that needed to be said, and that's where a lot of people have a problem. The honesty of a wrestler. God forbid there's honest people in pro wrestling. Well, Phil, CM Punk, I'm clapping, brother. I stand with you, as always. I know a lot of people have a hard time understanding what that is, understand what it's like to deal with frustration with people in the locker room who don't know what they're doing, who listen and take inspiration from people who don't know what they're doing. When your boss of your company is one of the biggest marks of them all, that must be very difficult. And I almost am afraid for CM Punk and my friends who are still over there I still have friends who are over in AEW, and I fear for them. And look what's happened now. Now, everyone's talking about all of the keyboard warriors, Dave Meltzer, and all these New Japan nuts, these smarks of the world were talking about how great AEW was, happy it was, all friends wrestling. And look what it is. I'm not going to go too much further into that, but make sure you tune in Thursday because that's going to be a whopper. I'm going to play what I said before AEW even had a single hour on television. We'll look at what I said needed to happen, what I said shouldn't happen, and what would happen if those things happened. And we'll find out how many of those things was I right about. And we'll look at that more deeply. But I'm going to say right now that I feel that wrestling journalists need to stay out of wrestling because there's no such thing. You're a journalist, then you're a reporter, then you're no different than any other media who makes up gossip to stir up nonsense. That's what you do. Dave Meltzer, especially, and I have no problem sharing his name and my disdain for such a man who has no respect for the wrestling business. I don't care what he tells you. Wrestling Mark and a half. He is on a payroll. He gets money for what he gets. He is the epitome of a sellout. Smart, a person who sits there on his in his little armchair and does what I just called earlier, armchair booking, who has never laced up a pair of boots, never went to a wrestling school, never stepped in front of an audience to do any kind of a wrestling event, never cut a promo, but yet he can take a smart thing. We started as a joke with the star rating, which was not Dave Meltzer's, by the way. That was not ever made up by Dave Meltzer. Dave Meltzer is credited for making it a thing. And to all the wrestlers who are out there looking for the star rating, you guys need to get evaluated because that's not what pro wrestling is. You don't get evaluated by some mark who sits there with a pen and paper and gives you a star on your paper. What you go by is what the crowd, how the crowd gets over. How is the reaction? Is the act over? Is it reaching the audience? That is what's important. Is it working with the storyline? Are the characters over? Because Dave Meltzer is an idiot. He would give a 5-star rating to a joke team like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega over giving a 5-star rating to a person like Bret Hart or Demolition out of his mind. He had the audacity to claim that the Bushwhackers were one of the worst tag teams of all time. The Bushwhackers were also one of the most over tag teams of all time. I'm not saying they put on the greatest matches of all time in these matches that talked about audience, but what the Bushwhackers had was the audience in the palm of their hands. They also sold merchandise, and they also had a worldwide audience that if they were to play that music and go out to that audience, the kids who grew up watching them, their kids would know who they were if they walked out there. If the Young Bucks walked out there, no one would know who the heck they were because that's the reality of it. That's the Bushwhackers, who was one of Dave Meltzer's least favorite tag teams. But before they were the Bushwhackers licking heads and dancing to the ring like they were, that they were in the WWE, they were one of the most fiercest, most violent tag teams ever to hit wrestling prior to that. Go look up the Sheepherders. It's the same team. And to my wrestling brothers out there, stop looking at the star rating as if it's any kind of relevance to your performance. If you're a wrestler and you know you put on a good match, go with that. Go with what the crowd says. Go with what your feeling says. Go look how a match looks for yourself. Don't go searching for the stars because then you're looking for a different business. People look for star ratings in the movie business, not in the pro wrestling business. That's the message to my fellow wrestlers out there. Keep it separate. Stay in your lane. Now, to MMA news. Well, not a lot of MMA news, except for on Icons of VF4L, we have a new member of a certain family who's going to be making his debut on our next show on the 14th, as the Adels have yet another brother, as if things haven't gotten enough Adels. 3 wasn't enough. We go from 3 to 4 as the Adels have their youngest brother joining the fray on the next episode of Icons of the Afro on our YouTube show, as Troy the Terror Adele joins the rankings of his older brothers, Anthony the Submission Hunter Adele, Mason the Hammer Adele, and Ty the Devil Adele. Now you have Troy the Terror Adele all joining forces on our next show, as you see Troy in action along with his older brothers making his debut. And that's some big news there. Also, a big shout out to some friends, the Adeles, of course, but also shout outs to Henry and Jairo Mena, the Mena boys out of Texas. They've been, you know, doing their thing with boxing, and they've been a lot of they've been very committed. Henry Mena has been doing a lot of work on his core workouts and stuff like that. He looks in phenomenal shape. Big respect to Henry for all of his dedication, and Jairo putting in just as much work, as you know. These two young brothers out of Texas are going to be taking over the end of the UFC because that's their drive, and we believe in them. So there's that. I believe in the Adeles too, as much as that, but the commitment of these two young brothers who continue to just rise in to the exchange. Also, shout out to our newest member of our you know, big two shout outs to our two newest additions, as you guys already saw, Grayson the Super Duck Russell and his mother Angela Russell, both made their debuts technically end of August, but also had two big matches on our last show on the 4th of September during our back-to-school special. I know, right? Grayson, the Super Duck Russell, and his mother were guests on this podcast where we asked them, hey, would you like to become part of the roster? And, of course, now they are part of the roster, and they're already, and I can tell you this, both of them are current champions already. And remember, folks, we don't control the outcomes. We put the matches together, and we put them in a match fairly, and they win on their own or they lose on their own. They grow, and that's how it works. Mason and Carter Stritzel, the Stritzel Fight Club out of St. Louis, Missouri, they're really putting St. Louis on the map. I think they should just call it St. Stritzel, Missouri. I think that sounds like a great idea. I'm wondering how they're digging Cobra Kai. I know they're big fans of Cobra Kai, as the Cobra, Carter Stritzel, which is where he gets his name from. He is, you know, they're both doing really well. They had an event not long ago, and Carter won his event, and Mason's been a beast all over his event. So big shout out to them, and they're doing great work. We're proud of all of our competitors in the youth MMA world, the future of UFC and MMA. And also, these are young men who all put all, no matter where they are, they're all committed and putting in serious work to getting those goals done and achieving their dreams. And that's something that should be respected. And we have more on the way. Of course, we know JoJo the Bodybuilder and Jaden Brooks and Phil Ricardo Jr., who made his debut not long ago also. They have all been achieving everywhere outside of the ring and in the ring. JoJo and Phil have become the number one contenders for the United States Tag Team titles, which they're going to get their chance on the 14th of October. That's tomorrow, isn't it? It is tomorrow. Awesome. Anyway, so tomorrow will be their tag team title opportunity for the United States Tag Team Championship against the Father-Son Fist Bump podcast. So it should be interesting and pretty evenly matched, I guess. So that should be pretty big. Also, just a programming note, I have, you know, I check in with all of our roster members outside of the event, and I talk to the real people inspired by the events, and just want to give our, you know, just say we support everybody, and to JoJo, the model Sebastian, and Jackson, Robert Scott, and a lot of those people that have been very, very busy. Committed to doing their own thing. JoJo Sebastian, the model, has been focused on school. We commend him for that, and we respect him for that, and he's taken some time to focus on those things. So we're going to respect that and honor that by, you know, giving him that time to just be himself and be a young man. And we're always going to be here to support and to, you know, be here when he gets back or whatever the case may be. And Jackson and Robert Scott's been super busy, and we'll be, you know, catching up with them down the road, so to speak. And there'll be more coming in the time, you know, as time goes on. Of course, you know, we have, our next biggest show we have is coming up in November. So that's our Team Warfare tournament we do every year. Team Warfare is really an extension of the Survivor Series. It's elimination-style four-man tag teams, well, eight-man tag teams. So teams of four, taking on teams of four, so one person's left. We're going to start this tournament, and basically it goes by whoever is eliminated will continue going until the end. And then we'll have the Ultimate Survival Melee on the 24th of November. So it's really going to be a month-long tournament, starting on the 4th, then the 14th, and then finally on the 24th, we'll find out who the Ultimate Survivor is. We're going to do that for both the men and the women. So for the Dream Masters and the Women Warriors of Wrestling, we're going to go forward with that. I'm wondering now, though, should I go from Women Warriors to Dream Warriors and then Dream Masters of the males anyway? Should we go with that? I don't know. We'll have to see about that. A name change. Also, for those people who don't know, I have sold out and joined TikTok. Even though I say I have no time for Facebook or anything like that, my wife seems to have a lot of fun with the TikTok to blow off steam and to have some fun once in a while. So I think what's a good idea is to once in a while have something to let off steam and maybe give some inspirational speech real quick and whatever else. So my wife has convinced me to join TikTok. So I've joined TikTok for those people who are into the whole TikTok world. I'm on TikTok now, and I am not even aware of how to give you that information yet. But I will, in the next coming episode, I will give you all the deets on my TikTok. But what I'm going to do is give you guys my layouts of how to get a hold of me now. So if you guys want to be guests on here on the FOL Headquarters podcast, and want to talk about the various different things you guys do and whatever it is that you are aspiring to do, please reach out to me at Dream Masters. You can reach out on my email at WOW Dream Matches, M-A-T-C-H, that's W-O-W-D-R-E-A-M-M. Give me 1 second, folks. I just saw. I don't know why I'm stuttering with my own thing. I've given you 700 times. You can reach me on email at You can reach me at Dream Matches at WOWDREAMMATCHES@gmail.com. Or you can find me on my Instagram at FRLICON, I-C-O-N, SEANJAZZSTEVENS 1, that is on my Instagram, which I am primarily for the most part, if I'm on anywhere. And then, of course, next time I come on, I'll give you my TikTok stuff. I can't tell you I have a lot of stuff on TikTok yet because, again, I just started, and I'm going to be very busy, so we'll see how much I can contribute to the TikTok world. But there's that. Also, I plan on returning to YouTube with some things. I know that they have Inspirational Monday, so I might do some of that. And I can tell you there's a few YouTube videos in the works, as well as the anniversary for a certain YouTube sensation who is going to be celebrating his return to pro wrestling or debut in pro wrestling as Jazz, as the one with the bulging biceps, the perfect pecs, the washboard abs, where one day we can celebrate the emergence of the one with the one they call Jazz Fitness, the YouTube sensation, that is. Anyway, we'll have all that and more. I will be back with you guys in a couple days, probably on Thursday. I have a lot of life things to do in the next couple days, so Thursday I'll be back for an all-new throwback episode, as we're going to revisit the things I just mentioned. also want to let you guys know that I have also partnered up with my local library, where I'm going to be doing this show live at one of our at my local library to promote the importance of libraries, to show you that there's more fun to be had going to a library than just, you know, a lot of people get their books via on digital or online. But I'm going to really kind of bring, you know, the old school going to the library back, as I'm going to be bringing this podcast to you guys live from the library next time I do a show. And to show you that libraries are cool too. They're a good place to not only get books and keep up with modern time, but also to study and to, you know, reach out. They have a lot of current events and community events, and we'll be doing that on our next show. So that should be pretty cool. We're going to have a new home from the library, possibly maybe next Talking Tuesday we'll do that from the library. And a shout out to the librarians out there who work hard, who are probably one of the most underrated people out there, to make sure people have the certain answers and knowledge that they need when we need it the most. So to all of my F4Ls out there, no matter what you are, what you're doing, a big shout out to all of you guys. Know that I am with you guys, I support you guys, and I always believe in you guys. And the biggest thing is, you must remember to believe in yourselves. Once you have all that, you will achieve anything that you set out to do. I am your host, the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, saying may all your dreams come true. Peace from the F4L headquarters. I am Sean Jazz Stevens. Peace.